As mentioned, I am an attorney. I'm not a doctor. And I also took off my ring and put up my purse before I came up here. It makes you think. I have been working on some of these issues, Guantanamo, interrogation, and torture, since 2002, being one of the first attorneys to bring a case in the courts in D.C. That eventually made it to the Supreme Court. So I was one of the first lawyers to go to Guantanamo. Okay, that's the disclosure. So I'm going to talk about a number of issues that were raised in the first presentation. Thank you for that. In particular, torture, use of torture, enhanced interrogation techniques, or otherwise known as EITs, overuse of solitary confinement, mostly focusing on national security detention, but I'm also going to talk a little bit about the use of solitary confinement in immigration detention, which is often overused. Talk a little bit about healthcare professionals' participation in these issues and actions, and how they violate the law, and then ending with some possible actions that healthcare professionals can be involved in. Okay. So healthcare professionals, particularly psychologists, were very much involved and had a role in planning and devising the interrogation program that was used at Guantanamo in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in particular, you can see I've listed a number of the sort of different techniques that were used: waterboarding, electric shocks, sleep deprivation, violent shaking, temperature manipulation, et cetera, et cetera. And these were all part of a plan to break a detainee, to break him down so that he would confess, which in many cases they were breaking down innocent detainees who had nothing to confess, as you might know. There is a lot of documentation on the role of psychologists and physicians in planning the interrogation techniques in the torture program. On the back table, you'll see I brought a couple of reports, but you can find Physicians for Human Rights has actually issued a number of reports since 2005. They're all on our website, Physicians for Human Rights, if you care to look at some of the documentation, the declassified reports and memos, Senate Armed Services Committee reports that were eventually declassified, to see how psychologists were intimately involved in devising these techniques. Going on, healthcare professionals were also involved in monitoring and calibrating harm and how these were used on detainees in interrogations. In particular, as you might know, two of these names, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, or KSM, and Abu Zubaydah, who were subject to both of whom were subject to waterboarding. In those waterboarding sessions, there was a healthcare professional, either a physician or a psychologist, participating and attending. These are some additional roles in which ways in which healthcare professionals were used. I can tell you these were some of the first things that I learned when I first started going to Guantanamo in 2004. My clients at the time told me about the involvement of healthcare professionals in their abuse and torture. As a person whose mother is a nurse, has been for over 35 years, I have to tell you I was shocked and at that time disbelieving that healthcare professionals were doing these things. But again, as I said, the reports and declassified memos have indicated that in fact this is all true. And this summer, there was a report that came out on the use of psychoactive medications on detainees who were then interrogated. I think another interesting way in which healthcare professionals have been involved is the failure to report clear evidence of torture and abuse, the failure to document it. So you'll see a lot of the medical reports of detainees do not indicate or even indicate that the healthcare professional or doctor asked the detainee how they broke their leg or how they have scrapes all over their knees from being dragged from their cells to an interrogation. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and go to solitary confinement. which has been used in national security detentions, again, as sort of to break the detainee. It's isolation or segregation is sort of considered a interrogation technique. It certainly was for several years a condition of confinement at Guantanamo and other detention sites. For the very purpose of sending that detainee to an interrogation. You also know about the use of solitary confinement in some of our federal prisons, such as Pelican Bay and TAMS out in Chicago, I think. But I think less known is the use or overuse of solitary confinement in immigration detention. And I just want to say, whatever the detention setting, in many situations, abuse of solitary confinement can lead to torture and certainly cruel and human degrading treatment or cruel and unusual punishment. So let me just talk about immigration detention for a little bit. All right. So the whole point of immigration detention is to ensure that aliens who are removable will appear at their hearing and to comply with orders. In practice, or in reality, I should say, when they are in detention, they are subject to poor detention conditions, solitary confinement and segregation, as mentioned, indefinite detention, all of which can lead to physical and psychological trauma. Now, the whole point of this is that these are not convicted criminals. They're not even criminals. If anything, they've broken a civil law. And many of these immigration detainees are, in fact, asylum seekers. So they are running away from and fleeing situations of torture and abuse. And solitary confinement and segregation, of course, only exacerbates the experiences and traumas that they've had. Okay. Now, torture, as you might know, is against the law, as is cruel, unusual punishment. There are a number of U.S. laws which prohibit torture. War Crimes Act, the Detainee Treatment Act, the Military Commissions Act, and those are all, those last two, Detainee Treatment Act and Military Commissions Act, are post 9/11 laws. So it is not simply a question of they were passed before 9/11 and things have changed. There are also a number of international laws prohibiting torture. Although, of course, we know the U.S. is not particularly keen on international laws or adhering to them. Jus cogens, which means compelling law, it's a peremptory norm in international law. Its prohibition against torture is so fundamental, and so many states at least accept the idea that torture is prohibited, that it's considered jus cogens. And you can see there's a number of international laws that prohibit torture and cruel and human degrading treatment. Okay, why is this all even matter now, right? People say, that was, Guantanamo. Well, Guantanamo's still there, but, the torture, the waterboarding, Abu Ghraib, that's all in the past. We're going forward. Well, first of all, we know that we have a president who may not be as kind to human rights as we had previously thought. And we also have a presidential candidate who believes and has already said that he would use waterboarding. So either way, I think we are not guaranteed. Further, I think this is an interesting survey. You can see the distinction here is, so the top figure in 2007, 27% of Americans surveyed said the U.S. should torture prisoners captured in the fight against terrorism. In 2012, that number went up to 41%. 41%. In 2007, those opposed was 53. In 2012, that number dropped. So less people were opposed to torture. Naked chaining, In 2005, 18% they believed that naked chaining was okay. In 2012, 30% thought it was okay. And then you can see again the reverse goes with disapproval. More people disapproved in 2005, less people disapprove now. In 2005, waterboarding, you only had 16%. That figure has jumped. In 2005, you had 82% people disapproving of waterboarding, and that has also decreased recently. This survey is available on foreign policy online. It came out, I want to say, about a month ago. The author is Amy Zegert, if you're interested in looking. All right. So we know that it's still a problem, right? So what can we do? Well, Dr. Seidel and Levy gave several great examples, sort of more specific, about raising awareness education. Join a coalition or a nonprofit. I want to say about raising awareness, I think, particular to this presentation, not that many people are really aware that healthcare professionals were so intricately involved in the use of torture and enhanced interrogation techniques at detention sites. And, you know, Guantanamo still has a couple of hundred detainees, and Bagram has several thousand detainees. So I think there's sort of a fallacy to think that, oh, you know, once Guantanamo goes away, detention under the laws of war or national security detentions will go away. That's not the case. And then I end with just a few things that Physicians for Human Rights has done. I did bring a couple of reports, a couple of handouts in the back. One says, Take Action, which has a number of ways in which you can become involved. I brought a solitary confinement report used in immigration detention called Invisible in Isolation. And in December, we're going to be issuing a report on the overuse of solitary confinement coming out in December. Doctors of the Dark Side is a documentary film that has been sort of being screened nationally. In fact, it was just shown at Stanford in the UN Film Festival with this year's theme being Human Dignity. It is a terrific documentary. Community centers are showing it, law schools, med schools, and it shows the involvement in healthcare professionals. So I hope you'll check out their website, Doctors of the Dark Side. And let me end there with some questions. We have a couple minutes.
We have time for at least one question over here first.
No, and I have to admit it was not a super thorough survey in the sense that I think it was some of an informal survey done by this woman, although she did survey over 1,000 people, and she used the exact same questions that were used in 2005 to make sure there was sort of no inconsistency there. But I don't think it talked about why.
Take one more question. Bob, in the back.
What's the current position of the American Psychological Association?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I strongly urge you to try to check out Doctors of the Dark Side, which addresses the internal sort of debate. And as you all might know, there is a debate. And it really focuses on the use of psychologists directly in interrogation. So whether psychologists should be in the room, should they be helping devise ways for particular detainees. The APA feels that is okay because they're making interrogations safe and ethical. Our position, and I think the position of other associations, is that it's one thing to be involved in research, sort of generically, where there is no individual detainees involved. It's completely another thing to be involved in this individual interrogation, and the APA feels that is okay because they somehow make it safe, which of course just means they're calibrating harm.